Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in the San Diego Performance Academy. Today I'm reporting on a tax-dodging scandal involving Supervisor Bill Horn. Horn is under fire for operating a nonprofit organization that violated state and federal laws, according to prominent tax experts. iNews source first uncovered Horn's ties to the nonprofit called Basic Faith when the news team conducted a background check on his candidacy. They found a $1,372 tax lien filed against the charity for failure to pay California state taxes. Why would a nonprofit that is not required to pay taxes have a tax lien? Because the IRS had revoked the nonprofit's tax-exempt status, and so the state sought to collect corporate taxes from the organization. Records show that Bill Horn acquired the nonprofit around 1979 and changed its name from Sojourners Foundation to Basic Faith, but he never filed tax returns or Form 990s, which are required for charitable organizations. Its officers were his children. Basic Faith no longer exists today. It has no website or assets, and Horn officially dissolved it in 2012 after losing nonprofit status for his so-called charity, it's been reported. Horn, a real estate broker, has said he bought the charity to hold money from real estate deals. He claims to have sold millions of dollars worth of real estate, giving interest to Christian missionaries abroad. "I wouldn't have to pay taxes on the money earned," Horn said, KPBS reported. KPBS asked five prominent tax experts to look at the iNews source report and documentation. All five concluded that Horn's actions with Basic Faith violated both federal and state laws, and that he could face civil and possibly criminal sanctions. Attorney Marcus Owens used to head up the nonprofit division at the IRS for a decade. He told KPBS, "There is virtually nothing that I would describe as legal about the way the supervisor appears to have managed the charity." Frances Hill, a law professor, helped shape U.S. nonprofit tax policy. She told KPBS that the abuse of the law was blatant and suggested both the IRS and state authorities have grounds to investigate Horn. Supervisor Horn insists that the charity was part of his private life, saying, "It was mine. I owned it. I bought it." But it's against the law for anyone to buy a nonprofit. Nonprofits must also be run for the public good, not private gain. They must file tax forms each year, and they can't engage in political activities. Yet in 2000, Horn hosted a Basic Faith Foundation National Day of Prayer featuring Republican presidential candidate Alan Keyes as keynote speaker and charged hefty admission fees. Some religious organizations and other foundations can be considered private foundations, but even then, they must still file tax returns and cannot be run for private gain nor for political purposes. Horn has stopped talking about the foundation under media scrutiny into apparent wrongdoing. Instead, a political consultant told KPBS that Horn's memories are decades old and that tracking down details on transactions would be difficult, if not impossible. Owens said consequences for Horn could range from criminal sanctions, including fines and jail time, to civil penalties for failing to keep books and records, file tax returns, and pay taxes plus interest. And he could even face tax penalties if, Owens said, "as I suspect, somebody's taxable income was being sheltered." The revelations come at an inconvenient time for Horn, who squares off in the June primary election against Oceanside Mayor Jim Wood, a former police officer. Whether the allegations of tax dodging and misuse of a religious charity will leave Supervisor Horn vulnerable to losing his seat in the election will be up to the voters in District 5, which includes the inland East County communities of Borrego Springs, Ranchita, and Warner Springs, as well as Valley Center, Palma Valley, Paula, Carlsbad, Oceanside, Rancho Santa Fe, San Marcos, Vista, Fonsal, Fallbrook, Duluth, and Rainbow. But even if Supervisor Horn wins re-election, his victory could be short-lived if he is found to have hornswoggled tax authorities and taxpayers believing he could use his nonprofit, Basic Faith, for personal gain.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Opposition is growing to Assembly Bill 2145, a bill that consumer advocates warn is an effort by large utility companies to crush competition. If enacted, AB 2145 would limit consumers' choices and make it difficult for competitors of SDG&E, such as the nonprofit San Diego Energy Foundation, to offer ratepayers an alternative for buying clean green power. It also infringes on local government's decision-making power and would make it difficult for a city or county, such as San Diego, to create its own district. In effect, the bill increases power for monopolies such as SDG&E. The bill is expected to be heard as early as this week in the legislature. Now, a petition urging the legislature to reject AB 2145 is circulating at www.noon2145.org. So far, 23 cities and counties have come out in support of the petition against AB 2145. So have many elected officials, including San Diego Supervisors Diane Jacob and Dave Roberts. The California Public Utilities Commission's Office of Ratepayer Advocates also opposes the bill, along with the League of California Cities, Friends of San Diego Clean Energy, the California Sierra Club, San Diego Energy Foundation, the California Manufacturers and Technology Association, the World Wildlife Fund, and dozens more. You can sign the petition or read a list of supporters at www.noon2145.org.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Capitol Report. While many legislators spent time with family on Mother's Day, Congresswoman Susan Davis went to Afghanistan. The San Diego Democratic House member led a bipartisan group of women congressional members to visit with U.S. service members and with groups of Afghan women, as she has done each Mother's Day since 2009. Representative Davis says that seeing Afghanistan through the eyes of our Mother's Day trips over the last 6 years has given our bipartisan delegation a unique perspective on our mission in Afghanistan and the future of that country. The group thanked the troops, especially mothers serving far away from their children, and presented handmade Mother's Day cards from children in local schools. They also visited a school in Afghanistan, all while Afghans experience their first open presidential primary election and prepare for the departure of coalition forces, which President Barack Obama has promised to bring home by year's end. The Afghan people remain wary, fearing that coalition members may abandon them, Congresswoman Davis said, urging that this issue be addressed. She also urged support of a bilateral security agreement by both Afghan presidential candidates, adding, "Even as coalition forces reduce their presence, there is growing confidence in the Afghan National Army and police, but increasing their ability to operate independent of coalition forces remains a challenge," she added. Finally, Congresswoman Davis observed, "With so much transition in Afghanistan, the question is really how to judge success. I believe we can judge their future by how integrated women are in the workings and decisions of the government and civil society. In many cases, the gains made over the last 13 years will best be sustained where U.S. support is clear in purpose and limited in scope, and where the American people see purpose in our efforts."
After more than 40 years, Wild West Bonita Fest is now history. The Bonita Business and Professional Association has voted to disband by a vote of just 15 of its 50 members, UT San Diego reports. The association indicates the vote was uncontested, raising questions over what the majority of members who didn't vote think about the decision to permanently cancel Bonita Fest and other community events. Carrie Long Fernandez, president of the association, said it was a financial decision but did not divulge details. Memorabilia from the event, along with remaining reserves, will be donated to the Bonita Museum and Cultural Center. The event, founded in 1973, featured a parade, melodrama, entertainment, crafts, games, exhibit booths, refreshments, a kids zone, and the popular freestyle motocross show. The melodrama's director has said he does plan to continue writing scripts in hopes of someday staging more shows. This following message was posted on the Bonita Business and Professional Association's Facebook page. Quote, "Dissolving the BBPA was a heart-wrenching decision to make and was necessitated by a change in demographics, manpower, membership, and financial support. We had to face the stark reality that we were no longer able to continue with business as usual." The message that was not signed added that the association's website and Bonita Fest page will be updated once more information is available on what's to come. In the meantime, the statement concluded, quote, "The board will continue to work with legal counsel to ensure that all obligations are met and that we're able to leave a lasting legacy for the Bonita community," end quote. The disbanded organization also organized other community events, including a holiday tree lighting and chili cook-off each year, plus awarded scholarships to local deserving students. The organization's Facebook page had not been updated in weeks prior to the cancellation. It is unclear why the group voted to disband, much like the San Diego Opera, without notifying media of its financial woes in order to make a concerted effort to alert the public that help was needed to save the organization. People with questions can contact bonitacalifornia.org/bonitafest or send an email to bbpa@bonitacalifornia.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I have two very special guests with me. The first is Herman Reddick, and Herman is the Group Program Manager with the San Diego County Fire Authority. Herman, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Secondly, I have Chief Greg Griswold, who is the Acting Unit Chief for CAL FIRE, and he's also the Acting Fire Chief for the new San Diego County Fire Authority. Chief Griswold, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, today we're going to be talking about career opportunities in firefighting, and I understand that there are a lot of those available these days. Can you give us an idea of how many career firefighters have been hired on locally through the County Fire Authority in the last year or so?
Well, actually, in the last, since January, a lot of the volunteers, 56 volunteers, have decided to make firefighting a career for them. So that's where we're at, about 56.
Right. And we're talking about people who came in as a volunteer with a minimal stipend, got all the training that a professional firefighter gets, and then were hired on to work for the County Fire Authority or CAL FIRE, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It starts off with the minimal training that's required by law and mandates, and then they're brought in to be a volunteer firefighter for the County Fire Authority.
Very good. And, of course, many of those volunteers went on to get jobs as full-time, well-paid firefighters working for CAL FIRE or the U.S. Forest Service or many other fire agencies around our region. So this really is a path to a future. Now, the issue of getting volunteers for the rural fire stations has actually become much more difficult than it used to be, and I understand that's because the laws at the state or federal level have changed to make these standards much more stringent. Can you tell us, you know, in the old days, what did a person have to do to be a volunteer firefighter?
Great question, Miriam. I started off as a volunteer firefighter over 30 years ago. And the requirements then to start off was, well, one, are you breathing? And two, can you get to the fire station? And I was successful in both of those. But, yeah, basically it was on-the-job training. You got hired, you got your gear, and you started going to calls immediately. And then you just continue going to school on your own. We went to Millmar College, you got your EMT and those things because you wanted to better yourself to hopefully have a career in the fire service.
Right.
Well, now we fast forward 30 years later into 2014, and basically, to put it in a nutshell, is the same training that a volunteer firefighter is required to have. The basic volunteer firefighter training is the same as a basic career firefighter training. So there's no difference. So you have to start off with a basic level, and all we're trying to do is follow the mandates that are upon us.
And they've also imposed much more stringent physical requirements. So even some of these guys who've been volunteer firefighters for 20, 30, 40 years out there are saying they've had to retire because they can't pass the physical. So So, in fact, there's nobody manning the store sometimes.
Yes, a lot of the physical requirements are more stringent than what they were before. And when we send folks through the Fire Academy, they go through a very demanding physical routine.
Right.
So that...
you've got to be able to carry somebody out of a burning building and all that.
Right. Carry hose, ladders. There's different things that you have to do. Mm-hmm. They have you running throughout the day to different tasks that the firefighters will have to go through. But it is more physical today than it might have been in the past.
Yeah. So is it a safe statement that the need is much greater right now for recruiting volunteer firefighters, even those who are using it as a career path to move upward, than it was in the past when maybe there might have been a lot of folks out in the community who were perfectly happy to come in and volunteer and be a firefighter?
Yes, in the past, a lot of volunteers, they might work at the store, and then when the sound or fire bell went off, then they would just leave the store and go down and mm-hmm. hop on the fire engine. Now, it's a 24/7 operation where they have to be physically ready to meet the demands of today's fire service.
The County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE, of course, did a wonderful job during the last fires, these wildfires that we had, of really getting everybody to safety's sake, with help with the sheriff, fighting these major fires. And even though they were burning all over, I think there were a few dozen homes that were lost, but nothing like what we saw in 2003 or 2007, where there were thousands of homes lost and, you know, hundreds of thousands evacuated. So obviously there's a lot of things that are improving under the County Fire Authority. One of the gaps, so to speak, has been that the rural fire stations, because of new laws for training and stuff, we're seeing some of the rural fire stations where there just aren't enough volunteer firefighters to man them. There have been some dark days and so forth. So what we're here to talk about today is how the county can go about filling those and what the career opportunities are for people who want to help your community by becoming a volunteer firefighter and then have an opportunity to be hired on ultimately as a career firefighter with either CAL FIRE or one of the many other firefighting agencies around. I guess some of them go on to what, U.S. Forest Service? And
that's correct.
Huh? Yeah, U.S. Forest Service. Some even get positions in other states like Texas or Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so good career opportunity. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what it takes to become a volunteer firefighter. And first of all, when we say volunteer, you're not entirely working for free. There is a very modest stipend. How much do volunteer firefighters get paid while they're going through the training?
Well, volunteers, once they go through the process and have been deemed ready to be volunteers in the stations, they receive $95 per shift.
And how long is a shift?
A shift is 24 hours.
Okay, so $95 every 24-hour shift.
Correct. And we encourage all of them to at least do 3 shifts a month. Many of them do more than 3 shifts a month, but at least 3 shifts a month, we are targeting that for the volunteers.
Okay. And are there any other expenses on top of that? Do they get mileage allowances or meal allowances or anything?
Well, that's what the purpose of the stipend, to cover okay. some of those incidental costs.
Who is eligible to apply and be brought on as a volunteer firefighter? What are the physical requirements and the background requirements that you have to meet?
Well, starting out, the minimum requirements for a volunteer in our program, you have to be 18 years of age, high school diploma or GED, valid California driver's license, and you have to have the ability to pass background and medical.
How much training do you need to go through?
Well, the training, we'll look at your applications when you first bring it forward. What we do is, on our website, we have a interest card that candidates are able to fill out. And through that interest card, we'll review all of their qualifications. If this is the first time that they've been involved with the fire service, we'll recommend some of the courses at community colleges that they should take to improve their knowledge about fire services.
Okay, and then you also have firefighting academies, don't you, that they can go through as well? Or, and emergency medical training, I understand, that they learn?
Yes, all of our candidates should have their emergency medical technician qualification cards. Mm-hmm. And those are, you can obtain those through going through courses throughout San Diego at community colleges, as well as meeting with emergency medical services, and that's with the County of San Diego. So, they can provide more information.
So if someone comes into this who doesn't already have training in any of these areas, let's say someone straight out of high school wants to apply, for example, how many weeks does it take to reach the point where you would be getting the $100 stipend and beyond that where you would be considered to be trained as a firefighter?
Well, somebody that's coming in that has no knowledge or no experience, we will be recommending them to go to community college.
Mm-hmm.
There are several courses that,
At their own expense, or is there any funding to help them with that?
That would be at their own expense.
Okay.
So they would go through community college courses. They have fire science courses. And it usually will take about 6 months to get through those courses.
Mm-hmm. Six months, okay.
And then their EMT course, they can take that at the same time at the community colleges. They have those there mm-hmm. as well. That depends on the individual, how long that will take. Some do it very quickly, and others it might take 6 months to a year.
Okay.
So it depends on the individual.
Okay, so we're talking usually 6 months, maybe a year. Now, once you become a volunteer firefighter and you're getting this $100 stipend and you need to volunteer at least 3 shifts a month, is that something that people can work around other jobs? In other words, are you on call anytime the fire service needs you? Or can you say, I can work only certain days of the week or certain weekends or something?
Well, what happens is those that are in our system, there's schedules that are posted the prior month. They can sign up for certain days that they are available.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on who else has signed up on those days, if there's no vacancies on a particular day, then they'll have to search for another day that meets their schedule.
Okay, but there is some flexibility. In other words, you could do this as sort of a part-time.
Yes, most of our candidates have a full-time job doing something else as a prepare to become career individual.
Okay. Now, for those who don't want to be a volunteer forever, and they don't want to work for this $100 stipend for the rest of their life, a lot of folks can't afford that, but they have their eye on moving up and advancing and becoming a career-paid firefighter or perhaps an emergency medical technician. Can you tell us about what the opportunities are there and how much the salaries might be for those kinds of jobs at the entry level and what you might expect to earn over a career with that?
Well, actually, it's a very good question. Many different agencies have different opportunities as far as benefit packages or salaries, et cetera. But I'll give you some ballpark. Once successful, you become a career firefighter. There's also the career firefighter that you start off as a seasonal one firefighter. And as a firefighter one seasonal, you can work anywhere from 4 to 9 months out of the year. And that's for Cal Fire and or the U.S. Forest Service, and even Bureau of Land Management also hires seasonals.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of our own department, as far as a benefit package, a seasonal will get roughly a monthly salary about $4,000 a month, plus they will get medical, dental, and vision as part of their benefit package, along with start contributing towards a retirement.
So that's a pretty nice entry salary of $48,000 a year or so. And over time, if you work there a number of years, what do these salaries tend to max out on? Or if someone advances and they want to become a deputy chief or a chief or something, are there some pretty good long-term career potential for moving up the ladder, so to speak?
Oh, I think that's the goal of a lot of our firefighters that come into the system. Yeah, you start off as a seasonal, and then we have exams from that point for permanent status, a firefighter two or a driver, which we call a fire apparatus engineer. At that point, then you go to fire captain, and then it's endless because a captain in our organization has 11 different functions that a captain can do, and then you get into chief, battalion chief, division chief, deputy chief, all the way up into where you could be the director of the state of California.
Oh, very good. And a number of these, I believe, are six-figure salaries. Is that correct?
I would say you have to get upwards of the assistant fire chiefs to be anywhere close to the six-figure.
Above, okay, mm-hmm. There you go. Now, there are also opportunities in emergency medical. Tell us about those. What's involved to move up into that?
how many jobs there are in that, and if you could give us an idea of what someone might expect to earn.
Well, as far as what they might expect to earn, I don't have that information, but as far as those that are EMT qualified, there's plenty of ambulance companies and hospitals that are looking for EMTs, and there's also the opportunity to move up and be paramedics.
Very good.
And paramedics and most of the fire service agencies, the cities, they have paramedic engines, so there's that opportunity for them to be on career stations that are paramedic.
That's a good point, Herman, because the fire service today is really in the municipality type of the fire service is paramedic. We are moving towards that in our own department, and all the departments throughout the state are moving to paramedic. So that is very important to consider.
Other than just the salary and the benefits, what are some of the advantages of being a firefighter? Chief Griswold, you've been doing this a lot of years, I imagine. What are some of the things that you like best about this as a career?
You know, I'm going on about 30 years in the fire service. I have to say I've enjoyed almost every minute of it. But quite frankly, we spend so much time with the people at work that they become your second family. If you looked at from the time you started to the time you retire, you're probably spending almost half that time with your second family, which is the fire service family. And to me, the friendships, the camaraderie, the trust that's built is second to none. That's what I find most enjoyable.
Yeah, and I would imagine it's certainly a very noble profession in that you're serving your community, you're giving back, and in some cases saving lives. So that has to be a satisfying feeling when you go home at night.
It's very satisfying, but like any work, it is work. And when we have those destructive fires, I can tell you firsthand that it's not always fun to watch that or to be part of that. It's quite frankly, there's a little party that leaves every time when it comes to those devastating fires. So that's the hard part of it.
Yeah. There certainly is a risk involved, of course, as well. But that said, what is the safety record for Cal Fire?
Well, the safety record, I don't have those figures in front of me, but I know that we have a very vigorous safety program. And any time there's a, what we call a near miss or an incident with regards to safety, we have what we call a SART team, which is a serious accident review team that comes in and looks at everything to make sure that we can learn something from that particular incident.
Right. Statistically, I've read, though, that firefighting actually is much safer than, although there's clearly a risk, than, say, being a police officer, for example.
Yeah, I know that we've done several strides in recent years with different capabilities of our breathing apparatus, our self-contained breathing apparatus, to keep those toxins out of our body. So I know that the fire service has done a great deal with that. We've improved our PPE, which is our personal protective equipment, and making things a little more maneuverable with us and cooler. So, yes, we have made some strides.
So, again, we're talking with Chief Greg Griswold, who is the acting fire chief for San Diego County Fire Authority, as well as Cal Fire locally, and with Herman Reddick, who's the group program manager with the San Diego County Fire Authority, for those of you that are tuning in late. And we are talking about opportunities to become a volunteer firefighter, which starts at a stipend of $100 a day after about 6 months of training, and then the opportunities from there to move up into career firefighting opportunities. So, once again, for those who tuned in late, can you give us an idea of about how many of your trainees who started as volunteers got jobs as firefighters within the last year or so since we've been working at this with the County Fire Authority?
Well, over the last few months, I would say about 56 received career jobs with Cal Fire, U.S. Forest Service, or other agencies across the country.
There you go. And how many went through the volunteer program in the last in that same period of time?
Through the volunteer program, we had about 55 that were brought into our program.
So that's pretty high. In other words, you're graduating up about as many of them moving on to career firefighting positions as are coming in the doors as trainees for the volunteer program. That sounds like pretty good odds if you're a job hunter out there.
Yes, this is a great career opportunity for young, motivated individuals to move forward and obtain a career in the fire service.
Very good. If listeners out there want to get more information about becoming a volunteer firefighter and getting that training toward either being a long-term volunteer serving the community or moving up into a career path, who who should they contact and where can they get more information?
For more information, it is on our website, and the website address is www.sdcounty.ca.gov/SDCFA.
Okay, and we will be posting that on our website as well, so listeners, if you missed that, you can go to eastcountymagazine.org and we'll have a story up all about this. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add that you think listeners or prospective firefighters should know?
Well, actually, I do have one thing, and thank you for the opportunity. You know, with this recent event to the conflagration that we just recently occurred here in San Diego County, we, for the first time that I can recall, the fire service thanking the community for one. Most everyone had really good defensible space around their homes. And two, they adhered to the evacuation orders. So that's what I like to do, is just take this opportunity. One, remind everybody that we still need to look at our defensible space. It is May. We're heading into a long season that, quite frankly, there's a lot of us that are a bit nervous. So
yeah.
Please, you know, do what you can to make yourself successful as it pertains to defensible space.
Very important to help the firefighters to help save your home before the next wildfire strikes.
Yes.
And also, volunteering is a noble service, and those that are interested in the fire service, please volunteer and be part of our program.
Well, very good. You can help keep your community safe. I want to thank both of you very, very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County features the Santee Street Fair, Julian Gold Rush Days, and some Memorial Day activities. Oh, and a dog race. The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival happens this year on Saturday, May 31st, and Sunday, June 1st, for two action-packed days designed for the whole family. Celebrating its sixth year, the Street Fair will host its first annual beer festival, featuring five local breweries: Twisted Manzanita Ales and Spirits, B&S Brewing and Distilling Company, Butcher's Brewing, Pacific Islander Brewing Company, and OG's Pizza and Brewing Company. There will also be more than 300 various food and vendor booths, continuous live entertainment on two stages, a family-friendly fun zone with games and attractions, and more than a dozen carnival rides. Admission to the event is free, and parking will be available adjacent to the event. Also, this year's festival highlights a flag-raising kickoff and national anthem honoring our heroes. The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival takes place on Riverview Parkway and Town Center Parkway in Santee. On Saturday, May 31st, beginning at 9 a.m., downtown La Mesa Village will dress up in red, white, and blue to celebrate a salute to Old Glory at the La Mesa Flag Day Parade. The festivities kick off at 9 a.m. with pre-parade concerts by La Mesa Middle and Parkway Middle Schools. At 10 a.m., the parade led by the United States 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing Band marches through downtown La Mesa Village. Guests can look forward to this year's celebration of the Ford Mustang's 50th anniversary. Spectators are encouraged to dress in patriotic colors. Step back in time for Julian Gold Rush Days, an event dedicated to preserving some of the town's history when Civil War veterans headed west in hopes of finding fortune. Activities are open to the public and scheduled for Saturday, May 31st and Sunday, June 1st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Julian Mining Company located on Highway 78. Historical encampments offer visitors a chance to meet miners, mountain men, and cowboys, and to experience gunfighting, reenactments, mock claim jumping, tomahawk throwing demonstrations, gold panning, and more. The old-fashioned mining camp will offer free admission, vendors, an arts and crafts market, food and drink, gem mining, children's pioneer games, free parking, and plenty of family fun, including a petting zoo. There will be daily performances by the popular Julian Doves and Desperados. Elsewhere in the town of Julian, for Julian Gold Rush Days, the folks at the Eagle High Peak Mine and Museum, one of the more prosperous mines during the Gold Rush, is open daily for tours. The tours give you the experience of what it was like in the early days of gold mining. And Eagle High Peak Mine and Museum offers daily tours of the mines from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. A Loritix Dog Fun Run will be held on Saturday, May 31st at 9 a.m. at Woodglen Vista Park in Santee. Lure coursing is a fun chase sport that's recognized by the American Kennel Club for both fun and titles. All dogs know how to do it without any training whatsoever, and all dogs are welcome to participate, including every single breed. At the California Wolf Center on Saturday, March 29th, there will be a presentation on the wolves' natural history, including their important role in the ecosystem, wolf mythology, current conservation issues and efforts, and the future of wolves right here in California. The California Wolf Center is located near Julian and houses several wolves. People of Earth will be performing at 7 p.m. for a free show at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room and Gallery in La Mesa on Saturday, May 31st from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Besides entertainment, there will be wine by the glass, cheese and crackers, and dessert available for sale. Seating is on a first-come, first-served basis. The Julian Fiddle and Picking Contest is back again this year on Saturday, May 31st at the Julian Town Hall. This fiddle and guitar picking contest is open to all ages and engages all those participating and listening in the festive and competitive atmosphere of the traditional old-time fiddle contest. 2014 is the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. To commemorate that event, the History Alive series in Lemon Grove has invited J. Elke Ertl on May 28th to speak and sign her book, Walled In, A West Berlin Girl's Journey to Freedom, and take questions from the audience. The author event takes place at Lemon Grove Library at 6:30 p.m. The presentation is free and suitable for ages 14 and over. ACES, the El Cajon Animal Center for Education and Services Foundation, is holding an animal house auction called Barkitecture 2014 on June 1st at O's American Kitchen, Parkway Plaza, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Custom-built animal houses have been donated to assist ACES fundraising efforts and will be auctioned off for the benefit of the El Cajon Animal Shelter. Included in the ticket price are food and drink, DJ Jumpin' Jack Flash, and the houses will also be judged. One of the judges is Co. Lewis from KGB Radio. The East County Produce Exchange will be holding their next event on Saturday, May 31st from 3:30 to 5 p.m. at the Hamul Hardware parking lot in Hamul. No money is exchanged and produce from yards and gardens is traded and given out, along with many other handmade items. Here is a preview of a few happenings for next week in East County. The Nile Sisters Development Initiative invites the public to celebrate diverse cultures in the City Heights community on Saturday, June 7th, to commemorate World Refugee Month. The event features a variety of ethnic foods, dancing, spoken word, a DJ, raffles, entertainment for children, and more. Festivities take place from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Colina del Sol Recreation Center on Orange Avenue in City Heights. The James Hubbell's annual Father's Day open house includes the grand opening of the new Ilan Lael Foundation building, the first brand new building on Hubbell Hill in 10 years. Iconic San Diego artist, global humanitarian, and cultural leader, James Hubbell will once again invite the public to tour his family's magical and historically designated compound in Julian for the annual Father's Day open house on Sunday, June 15th. The archive and gallery spaces of the new building will be open for the first time event, which will showcase some of Hubbell's most recent work. The Father's Day tour will be open to the public with tours from 11 a.m. until 1:30 p.m. or 1:30 p.m. until 4 p.m. The ticket price includes shuttle service from Rhinola Farms Marketplace to Hubbell Hill. An Alpine History Day event on June 7th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Alpine features a comic western skit, A Buggy Restoration in Progress, two pioneer houses open for touring, antique vehicles, and food. As part of the San Diego County Acoustic Showcase series of the San Diego County Library, Bill Hartwell will be performing at the Julian Library on Tuesday, June 3rd, from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Also on Tuesday, June 3rd, at the Rancho San Diego Library, Prairie Sky performs from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. A live local music concert by Levi Dean will be performed on Friday, June 6th at 7 p.m. at Kaffeemeister in Santee. With rich vocals, introspective writing, and accomplished musicianship, Levi Dean creates a progressive style that draws heavily on folk, roots, and bluegrass to make a distinct sound that is rooted in tradition, yet contemporary. That's all for this week. Destination East County is brought to you by our listeners and by a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
If you're angling for a fish dinner or just enjoy catch-and-release fishing, you can drop a line into Santee Lakes where night fishing kicks off on June 12th. There are a total of 5 night fishing dates coming up, June 12th and 26th, July 20th and 24th, and August 7th from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Lakes 1, 2, 3, and 4. Bring a lantern, no fishing licenses required, and no radios are allowed to disturb the silence of the evening or the fish. The lakes have been stocked with 8,000 pounds of catfish so far this season, with more coming on June 6th. Raymond Paul caught the largest so far, a whopping 4-pounder, in Lake 4 using hot dogs and mealworms as bait. The bass are biting in all lakes. According to the Santee Lakes Fishing Report, though Lakes 1 and 5 have been the hot spots. You can also catch bluegill by fishing around the cattails or off the docks. Santee Lakes has 5 docks plus 4 fishable islands, making this a fun destination to bring the kids and get them hooked on fishing. You can get more information or sign up for free fishing reports, including tasty fish recipes at www.santeelakes.com. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Nearly all of the animals rescued by the County Department of Animal Services during the recent wildfires are back home with their owners. Animal Services rescued more than 50 animals when fires broke out across our region earlier this month. In all, 6 cats, 4 goats, 18 dogs, 21 horses, an emu, and a bird were taken into the department's care. Only 3 cats remain. Animal control officers also helped a couple dozen owners evacuate their horses to locations other than the shelters. Officers evacuated between 40 and 50 head of cattle just from one ranch alone. Animal Services says pets should always be a part of your disaster planning. Microchips have shown time and again their ability to reunite lost animals with their owners quickly. It could save your pet's life, said Animal Services Director Don Danielson. We have rescued hundreds of animals during past fires, and the first thing we do is check for a microchip, she said. Every Thursday, the department's three shelters microchip and register dogs, cats, and rabbits for $10 per animal. The department also holds microchipping and registration events at various locations throughout the year. Another new tool is a smartphone app called Finding Rover. Animal Services is the first sheltering organization in the nation to begin using the free app, which uses facial recognition to match lost and found pets and can be used by anyone. Animal Services updates its database of animals with Finding Rover several times daily, so if your pet is turned into the shelter, you can check your smartphone or computer to see if he's there. For more information on Animal Services, visit sddac.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
After being closed for 2 years due to city budget cuts, Kumeyaay Campground at Mission Trails Regional Park is now open again to campers on Friday and Saturday nights. The San Diego City Council authorized the funding at the request of Council Member Scott Sherman, according to an article in the Mission Trails Regional Park newsletter. An extra full-time ranger and part-time director will be hired to oversee the campground operations. The Kumeyaay site includes 46 rustic campsites and a comfort station with showers. The campground is next to a small lake named Kumeyaay Lake and wilderness just steps away with over 50 miles of trails. Park visitors have been allowed access for day use of the campsites, but have not had access to overnight camping since it was closed by the City of San Diego in 2011. The campground offers a number of activities for people of all ages. The second Friday of each month, the public is invited to join members of the San Diego Astronomy Association at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground parking lot to view the universe through high-powered telescopes. On the second and fourth Saturday at 8:30 a.m., a volunteer trail guide offers free guided nature walks that leaves the campground entry station. Jay Wilson, executive director of Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation, is pleased that the council has restored funding for the campgrounds. Camping here is a great way for San Diegans to experience the wonders of our park at night and during the day, Wilson said, all while staying within the city of San Diego. For more information, visit www.mtrp.org.
The Omelet Factory on Baltimore Drive in La Mesa is not intended to be a drive-thru restaurant. But on Saturday, an out-of-control vehicle crashed into the restaurant, knocking a hole in the side of the building. There is no word on exactly what caused the accident. Heartland Fire and Rescue has indicated that a customer inside the restaurant sustained minor injuries and the building was evacuated for safety's sake. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This is Miriam Raftery with a report on an explosive California Public Utilities Commission hearing over a $3.3 billion settlement with utility corporations over closure of the San Onofre nuclear power plant. Advocates for ratepayers contend that the settlement unfairly burdens ratepayers with costs of the failed nuclear facility, while rewarding San Diego Gas and Electric Company and Southern California Edison stockholders and their executives. Former City Attorney Micah Geary argued on behalf of ratepayers at the hearing. Geary repeatedly pressed Michael Peavy, chairman of the Public Utilities Commission, to answer questions about alleged secret settlement talks with utility companies. Peavy denied having any meetings with the Utility Consumers Action Network, or TURN. But when Aguirre asked Peavy if he had met secretly with Southern California Edison, Peavy interrupted and became peeved, shouting out a profanity.
Now, this is a word we're allowed to say on the radio, so we're going to play this clip for yourself to hear how your chairman of the Public Utilities Commission responded to an advocate for the ratepayers. That's you, folks.
As far as TURN goes, I think it's general knowledge. My relationship with TURN is to be fair, chilly, and I have never talked to Mr. Friedman on this topic during that whole time at all, period. Mr. Friedman, that's it. Sorry.
What about Southern Cal Edison?
Sorry. About Edison? Yeah, I'm not here to answer your questions. I'm not here to answer your goddamn questions. Now shut up. Shut up.
Aguirre also asked that Edison President Ronald Lutzinger be required to confirm if his stock rose astronomically in value just days after the nuclear settlement was announced. His credibility is at issue, Aguirre argued, insisting that questions of financial motivations would be allowed in any other court of law. But Administrative Law Judge Melanie Darling refused to require that the questions be answered. Peavey has long been accused of being overly cozy with utilities, including accepting thousands of dollars in expenses paid for by SDG&E or its parent corporation, Sempra, including a European trip. Darling has drawn criticism for banning videotaping at a prior hearing, a move that Citizens Oversight Commission has contended was illegal. The hearing raised serious questions over the conduct of public officials and just whose interests the Public Utilities Commission was really representing.
If you've been wanting to work out but can't afford the high price of gym memberships, you'll soon be able to work out for free in El Cajon. On May 30th, the city of El Cajon will celebrate the grand opening of a new outdoor fitness park. Wells Park, located at 1153 East Madison Avenue in El Cajon, is being outfitted with outdoor adult exercise equipment including an elliptical cross trainer, recumbent bike, air walker, combo press pull station, and five additional exercising stations. The new equipment is intended for all exercise skill levels, so all members of the community should feel welcome to exercise at the location. The goal is to improve physical fitness for area residents. The City of El Cajon's Recreation Department purchased the equipment with grant funds received through the Indian Gaming Local Benefit Committee. The county administers the grant, which includes funds from the Verona Band of Mission Indians and the Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
Albert Ballou, Cherry Bomb, and Teddy are coming to East County. Bobby Brink and her animal rescue crew from Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine are on the road again, this time heading to North Carolina to rescue four bears. Albert and Cherry Bomb, two Alaskan silvertip grizzlies, were displayed in concrete pits at a roadside tourist attraction. Teddy and Ballou, Himalayan black bears, were in other menageries with equally deplorable living conditions, Brink stated. Currently living at a private residence in North Carolina, these four are poster bears for the burgeoning issue of the exotic animal industry and private ownership in the United States today, said Brink. Their story is yet another living example of the need for additional legislation so bears, big cats, and other exotic animals are not kept in inadequate private conditions in the United States any longer. All four bears will receive medical examinations and treatment, as well as a new home at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a nonprofit animal rescue facility in Alpine. The rescue was made possible by the support of local donors, other groups, and a generous come-on-down call from lifelong animal advocate Mr. Bob Barker, host of The Price is Right, Brink added. She also praised the County of San Diego staff for assisting in the permitting process to bring these four bears to San Diego's East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Trevor Hill.
The busy summer vacation season is here, and California is putting out the welcome mat for international travelers, which is something the White House wants too. President Obama last week said he wants to make it easier for foreign visitors to enter the U.S. because it'll mean more tourism dollars and, in turn, more jobs. Brian Wright with Visit California says 15 million international tourists visited the Golden State last year, and they're projecting an increase of 6% this year.
We love overseas visitors. They typically stay longer, they stay for over 11 nights, and they spend more per trip than domestic visitors do.
California has 13 international tourism offices around the world, recently expanding outreach in China and Mexico. The National Economic Council estimates a tourist from overseas spends an average of $4,500 when they visit our country. The president's plan focuses on making the entry process into the U.S. easier for foreign visitors, from shorter waiting times for visas to shorter and friendlier passport and customs lines. Wright says tourism is a huge economic driver for the state.
Visitor spending in California was about $110 billion this last year, supporting almost a million jobs, and that drives about $7 billion in state and local taxes.
He says California's many national parks and monuments are a big draw for international tourists.
The outdoor market for us overseas is also a very big draw. It's one of the top drivers for people to come to visit California in our brand markets, so it's something very important to us.
One of the most recent areas to get increased protection is the Point Arena Stornetta California Coastal National Monument, which was protected earlier this year. It was highlighted as the number 3 place to go in 2014 by the New York Times. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
Julian celebrates its Gold Rush Days next weekend, May 31st and June 1st, evoking the community's colorful past. East County's historic gold mining town was founded right after the Civil War by Confederate veterans who headed west to seek their fortunes. The town was named for Mike Julian, who settled here with his cousin, Drew Bailey. But a cattleman, Fred Coleman, is the one who found those first lucky flecks of gold in a creek in Julian in 1870, setting off a gold rush in the region. This weekend, you can step back in time to experience what Julian was like during those gold rush days. The Julian Mining Company on Highway 79 will have historical encampments where you can pan for gold and meet miners, mountain men, and cowboys, see tomahawk throwing and mock claim jumps, as well as gunfights. There will also be an arts and crafts market, gem mining, pioneer games for kids, food and drinks. Admission is free at this location. The Eagle High Peak Mine and Museum will also be open for tours, taking you inside the mine to see what life was like in those early days of gold mining. Throughout Julian's historic downtown district, you can participate in a scavenger hunt and be on the lookout for a golden nugget at participating stores. You can also take a special train ride offered by the Julian Train and Gold Mine Tours. For reservations for this event, call 760-765-2288. In addition, the Julian Doves and Desperados will perform historic comedy skits at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and 3 o'clock both days next to the Julian Market. Julian's days as a mining boomtown were over in just a few years, but soon a new bonanza was found in the rich agricultural soils that yielded bountiful crops of apples. No visit to Julian is complete without savoring apple cider and the handmade apple pies that have become this town's motherlode in modern times. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.